This is VOA News. I'm Joe Ramsey. Turkey on Sunday said rescue efforts following last week's devastating earthquake had ended in all but two provinces as visiting U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken announced $100 million U.S. dollars in fresh humanitarian aid.
When you see the extent of the damage, the number of buildings, the number of apartments, the number of homes that have been destroyed, it's going to take a massive effort to rebuild.
The 7.8 magnitude tremor that struck southeastern Turkey and northern Syria on February 6th has killed more than 44,000 people, with the likelihood of finding survivors 2 weeks on extremely remote. U.S. President Joe Biden is scheduled to travel to Poland Monday, meeting with allies to reassure its commitment to the region as Russia's invasion of Ukraine nears the one-year mark. AP correspondent Shelley Adler reports.
As White House National Security Council spokesman John Kirby said on Fox News Sunday, the U.S. will continue its support of Ukraine.
We are going to stay committed to Ukraine going forward. And I think when you see him go to Poland next week in Warsaw, he'll make that case before the entire world and the Polish people.
The president has underscored his commitment to Ukraine for both international and domestic audiences, but it's a commitment that's testing the patience of a narrowly divided Congress. I'm Shelley Adler.
North Korea has fired two short-range ballistic missiles off its eastern coast in its second weapons test in 3 days that drew quick condemnation from its rivals. The weapons firings follow an intercontinental ballistic missile launch Saturday and North Korea's threats to take an unprecedented strong response to U.S.-South Korean military drills. South Korea said the two missiles launched from a western coastal town, and Japan said the missiles fell in the waters between Korea and Japan. This is VOA News. Brazilian authorities say on Sunday at least 26 people died in two cities in North Sao Paulo State amid floods and landslides and warned the number could still rise. Some of the hardest hit cities canceled their carnival festivals as rescue teams struggle to find those missing, injured, or feared dead in the rubble. Brazil's President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva said on Twitter he will visit the region Monday. Sao Paulo State government said in a statement that precipitation in the region had surpassed 600 millimeters in one day, one of the highest amounts ever in Brazil in such a short period. A U.S. federal mandate for healthcare workers to get vaccinated against COVID has been in place nationally for a year, but some contend it's time to end it. AP correspondent Julie Walker reports.
An Associated Press analysis identified about 750 nursing homes and 110 hospitals nationwide that have been cited for violations of the vaccine mandate. Some nursing home administrators say that's made it harder to fully staff and want the mandate gone. But Dr. Georges Benjamin with the American Public Health Association says vaccine mandates work.
This is very important for both protecting yourself as well as your patients.
The healthcare vaccine mandate is scheduled to run until November of next year. I'm Julie Walker.
U.S. actor and comedian Richard Belzer has died at his home in southern France, according to The Hollywood Reporter. Belzer was 78. AP correspondent Margie Zaraleta has more.
Homicide.
Richard Belzer played Detective John Munch on Homicide and 9 other series for more than 2 decades. He never auditioned. Executive producer Barry Levinson heard him on the radio and asked him to read for the part. Belzer was a stand-up comedian and was the opening act in the early days of Saturday Night Live. Even before that, he was a newspaper reporter, and he told reporters in 1997 that's why his stand-up reflected the news.
I've just always been obsessed with current events, and I always felt that if I wasn't a stand-up comic, I would be a journalist, a stand-up journalist.
I'm Archie Zaraleta.
France and Burkina Faso have officially marked the end of French military operations in the West African nation. Burkina Faso's armed forces said on Sunday after a flag-lowering ceremony at the French Special Forces camp a day earlier. In January, Burkina Faso gave France 1 month to withdraw its troops as it ended a military accord that allowed French troops to fight insurgents on its territory, citing a wish for the country to defend itself. Find more on our website, voanews.com, or follow us on the VOA mobile app. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Today is Monday, February 20th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedofo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the U.S. holds military drills with allies in the Korean Peninsula as Pyongyang fires intercontinental ballistic missile.
The South's military said in a statement that the exercise, quote, affirmed the United States' ironclad commitment to the defense of the Korean Peninsula.
U.S. Secretary of State pledges additional $100 million in humanitarian aid to Turkey after deadly earthquake.
We're here to stand with the people of Turkey and Syria in the wake of this devastating earthquake.
And dozens of well-wishers make pilgrimage to the Carter Center as the former president enters hospice. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says U.S. intelligence suggests China is considering providing arms and ammunition to Russia. He says such an involvement in the Kremlin war effort would be, quote, serious problem, unquote. Blinken said he shared his concerns with China's most senior foreign policy official when they met Saturday in Munich during an international security conference. Russian President Vladimir Putin is determined to show some progress on the battlefield as the war nears the one-year mark, but his forces have been struggling to advance in eastern Ukraine. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham says the world should, quote, come down hard on China, unquote, if it provides lethal weapons to Russia. The United States held joint air exercises bilaterally with South Korea and Japan involving strategic bombers on Sunday, a day after North Korea fired a Hwasong-15 intercontinental ballistic missile in a, quote, sudden launching drill, unquote. Edward Baran of Reuters reports.
South Korea's Joint Chiefs of Staff said the exercise demonstrated the allies' overwhelming defense capabilities and readiness posture. The South's military said in a statement that the exercise, quote, affirmed the United States' ironclad commitment to the defense of the Korean Peninsula. In a separate exercise, Japan flew F-15s over the Sea of Japan with U.S. bombers, Japan's defense ministry said in a statement, calling the security environment, quote, increasingly severe. The air drills come a day after North Korea launched a long-range ballistic missile into the sea off Japan's west coast. North Korea's state media, KCNA, said the country conducted a, quote, sudden launching drill on Saturday, which was shown on state television. Saturday's missile launch was the North's first since January 1st. It followed Pyongyang's threat on Friday of a, quote, unprecedentedly persistent, strong response as South Korea and the United States geared up for their annual military exercises. Leader Kim Jong-un's sister, Kim Yo-jong, accused the U.S. of trying to turn the U.N. Security Council into a, quote, tool for its heinous policy toward Pyongyang.
That's Edward Baran of Reuters. And U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken pledged an additional $100 million in humanitarian aid to Turkey after a torrid earthquake hit southern part of the country on Sunday. Blinken arrived in Turkey on Sunday for an official visit and discussions on how Washington can further assist Ankara as it grapples with the aftermath of a devastating earthquake that killed tens of thousands of people. After arriving at Idlib Air Base, Blinken took a helicopter tour of the quake-struck area. Blinken later visited an aid logistics center and helped military personnel load humanitarian aid.
We're here to stand with the people of Turkey and Syria in the wake of this devastating earthquake. I just had a chance to fly over today to see some of the devastation. And it's really hard to put into words. You see buildings still standing and then buildings collapse. Roofs destroyed, right next to it, something that's still standing. But it gives you some sense of the scale of this. We've had tens of thousands of deaths, tens of millions of people affected by this earthquake. And of course, we still don't know the full extent of it. We've had about $85 billion worth of assistance poured in immediately for housing, water, and food, and medicine, and clothing. All that in the immediate days following the earthquake. Today I can announce that we will be putting in another $100 million to assist those who are so desperately in need. This is going to be a long-term effort. The search and rescue, fortunately, is coming to an end. The recovery operation is on. And then there'll be a massive rebuilding effort. See the extent of the damage, the number of buildings, the number of apartments, the number of homes that have been destroyed, it's going to take a massive effort to rebuild. But we're committed to supporting Turkey in that effort. Many countries around the world are doing the same. There's tremendous solidarity and tremendous determination to see this through. The most important thing right now is to get assistance to people who need it, to get them through the winter, and to get them back on their feet. But simply put, the United States is here. We stand strongly with the people of Turkey and the people of Syria through our NGO implementing partners, and we'll stick with it until we all get the job done.
That's U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken. President Joe Biden is gearing up to mark the anniversary of Russia's invasion of Ukraine with a speech in neighboring Poland on Tuesday, where he will reiterate the U.S. commitment to support the defenses of Ukraine for as long as it takes, unquote. This despite growing Republican reticence and softening overall support among Americans. White House Bureau Chief Patty Wyrasz-Kuwara has this report.
Amid the Russian offensive in Ukraine, U.S. President Joe Biden will mark the one-year anniversary of the war with a speech in neighboring Poland on Tuesday, said John Kirby, National Security Council spokesperson.
President Biden will make it clear that the United States will continue to stand with Ukraine, as you've heard him say many times, for as long as it takes. And on Wednesday, President Biden will give a chance to meet with the leaders of the Bucharest Nine, otherwise known as the B9.
The White House said there are no plans for Biden to visit Ukraine nor to meet with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky during this trip. But observers say a Poland meeting between the two is likely. The pair last met in late December when Zelensky made a surprise visit to Washington. Observers say Moscow is turning the conflict into a war of attrition in a bid to grind down Ukrainian resolve and exhaust the West's patience. Ukraine has the advantage of Western high-tech weapons, but Russia benefits from the sheer size of its economy, manpower, and defense production capacity. George Beebe, director of grand strategy at the Quincy Institute, via Skype.
We are trying essentially to achieve a balance here, to give the Ukrainians enough military wherewithal that they can bring this war to a successful conclusion, but to do so without recklessly raising the risks of World War III, as President Biden is fond of saying. And that's not an easy balance to strike.
While there is still broad support for Ukraine in Congress, some Republican lawmakers in the House of Representatives, whose party now holds a slim majority, are questioning the massive flow of American funds to Kyiv, $40 billion in security, economic, and humanitarian aid since the invasion. Ryan Zinke, a Republican congressman from Montana, spoke to VOA earlier this month.
This war is being fought in the backs of U.S. taxpayers. And what's our plan, Mr. President? Is it an endless war? Are we going to continue to feed armament that we don't know where it's going exactly, or how it's going to be used, to what extent?
Polls show nearly half of Americans now say Washington should urge Kyiv to settle for peace as soon as possible. Patsy Wyrasz-Kuwara, VOA News at the White House.
Thank you, Patsy. And joint naval exercises, including South Africa, Russia and China, is underway in waters off South Africa's east coast, despite U.S. concerns on Ukrainian condemnation. Critics say the 10-day military drills will do little to benefit South Africa and act as a propaganda boost for Moscow on the one-year anniversary of its ongoing invasion of Ukraine. Kit Butler reports from Johannesburg.
While the West is upping its arms shipments to help Ukraine fend off Russia's invasion, South Africa begins war games with Russian warships that proudly support the offensive. Russia's Admiral Gorshkov, which arrived in Cape Town this week, is marked with the Kremlin's pro-war symbol, the letter Z. Critics say the optics of South African servicemen aboard the frigate near the one-year anniversary of Russia's invasion would be a coup for Moscow and a shame to the country of freedom fighter Nelson Mandela. Ukrainian ambassador to South Africa, Lubov Abravitova, told VOA she condemns the drills.
It is very disturbing that South Africa will be hosting the military exercise with the country aggressor, invader, that is using its military force against peaceful country, bringing destruction and trying to eliminate Ukrainian nation.
South Africa has repeatedly defended its neutral stance on the conflict in Ukraine and its right to relations with Russia, a fellow member of the BRICS trade bloc with Brazil, India, and China. South Africa's Minister for International Relations and Cooperation, Naledi Pandor, last month welcomed her visiting Russian counterpart, Sergei Lavrov, and said Pretoria wouldn't be bullied into choosing sides. The opposition Democratic Alliance, though, says Pretoria's hosting the drill shows it has dropped any pretense at neutrality. Democratic Alliance Shadow Defense Minister Corbis Marais adds the drills, called MOSI 2, won't benefit South Africa's depleted Navy and the funds would be better spent elsewhere.
Given our very limited naval capabilities, resources and other higher priorities, we can gain little or no value from Exercise MOSI 2, especially from the presence and the possible launch of the hypersonic missile.
The Gorshkov is equipped with hypersonic Zircon missiles, which Russian state media report could be fired in a training launch during the drills. South African officials have denied the missile launch will be part of the 10 days of exercises, which also include China's Navy. South Africa's Defense Department said this is not the first war game with Russia and that it previously joined military drills with its Western allies as well. However, South Africa this year declined an invitation to join US-led multinational maritime drills in the Gulf of Guinea. South African Institute of International Affairs Russia expert Stephen Groost said Pretoria is trying to straddle both sides.
South Africa does see a future in which Russia and China are both very, very important partners, but it's still also trying to balance its relations with Western states. There may be some fallout. We're not sure of what kind, but the US is certainly not happy at all that South Africa is taking part in these exercises.
Asked to comment on the drills, the U.S. State Department told VOA by email it noted them with concern, even as Moscow continues its brutal and unlawful invasion of Ukraine. The statement went on to say, "We encourage South Africa to cooperate militarily with fellow democracies that share our mutual commitment to human rights and the rule of law." Since Russia's invasion last February, U.S. officials estimate tens of thousands of Ukrainian civilians have been killed, along with as many as 100,000 troops or more on each side. The Russian embassy in South Africa and South Africa's defense ministry did not reply to requests for comment. Kate Bartlett for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Dozens of well-wishers made a pilgrimage Sunday to the Carter Center in Atlanta, as prayers and memories of former President Jimmy Carter legacy was offered up at his small Baptist church in Plains, Georgia, a day after he entered hospice care. Carter, at age 98, the longest living American president, had a recent series of short holiday stays. Hospital stays, the Carter Center said in a statement Saturday that the 39th president has now, quote, decided to spend his remaining time at home with his family and receive hospice care instead of additional medical intervention, unquote. In Atlanta, people, some traveling many miles, made the trip to the Carter Center to reflect on the life of the former president on a spring-like Sunday under a sunny sky. This is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres says many African countries have been denied needed debt relief and concession financing. Maya Makasio reports from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, where the AU is headquartered.
Speaking at a news conference held at African Union headquarters, Secretary General Antonio Guterres said in order to draw on the continent's potential, a series of challenges must first be overcome.
A dysfunctional and unfair global financial system that denies many African countries the debt relief and the concessional financing they need. Systems and structures from health and education to social protection, job creation and gender equality are starved of investment for lack of support.
Guterres mentioned the impact that debt has on the continent's economy in his remarks earlier in the day at the opening ceremony of the AU summit. He emphasized that developing African countries are often left out when global investment lenders create their financial plans.
African countries cannot invest in these critical areas and climb the development ladder with one hand tied between their backs. Behind their backs.
Guterres pointed out that Africa is dramatically underrepresented at the United Nations Security Council and at Bretton Woods institutions.
We need a new debt architecture
that provides debt relief and restructuring to vulnerable countries, including middle-income countries, while providing immediate debt suspension and write-downs to countries in need.
AU Commission Chairperson Moussa Faki Mahamat made the opening remarks to kick off the AU summit and was followed by Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed. The opening ceremony included the handover of the AU chairmanship from Senegalese President Macky Sall to Comoros President Azali Assoumani. The theme of this year's AU Assembly is Year of AfCFTA, Acceleration of the African Continental Free Trade Area. Maya Masakar for VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
Caribbean leaders with the regional bloc CARICOM are focused on helping Haiti deal with multiple crises during a Bahamas summit this week. The group is discussing Haiti's struggle with armed gangs, hunger, a cholera outbreak, and the country's political vacuum. As VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sen reports, the bloc is expected to push for international assistance, including from the United States and Canada.
As thousands of Haitians flee escalating gang violence and many travel through nearby islands to reach Florida, the leaders of the 15-nation CARICOM bloc, along with Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and senior U.S. officials, have gathered for a summit in the Bahamas. Trudeau spoke with VOA.
Canada will always support the Haitian people. The conversation is, how can we do it better? And I'm looking forward to that conversation.
As the Secretary General of the Caribbean Community notes, the focus is on helping Haiti out of its crisis. Carla Barnett is Secretary General of the Caribbean Community.
Even as progress is being made on some fronts, CARICOM and indeed wider international community continue to struggle to help Haiti resolve its multifaceted crises. We will continue our efforts to assist all stakeholders in Haiti to ensure a Haitian-owned resolution to the crises.
Civilian protesters and police marched through Haiti's capital, Port-au-Prince, in January to demonstrate against a wave of police killings by armed gangs. Increasingly, the gang leaders in Haiti are turning into warlords. Keith Mines of the U.S. Institute of Peace told VOA. He spoke to VOA via Zoom.
It's not a failed state. It's an extremely fragile state. And that's an important distinction because there is still a lot of things to work with now that won't be available if it becomes a failed state. And it is on the cusp, I think, of becoming a failed state. If the government was to collapse completely, if the gangs that now control 60-70% of Port-au-Prince were to control all of Port-au-Prince.
With gangs controlling much of the capital, Haiti's acting leaders are seeking the deployment of foreign troops. A request made to the UN Security Council in October, although no action has been taken. At the State Department, spokesperson Ned Price said Tuesday the United States is working with Canada and other partners to provide Haiti's national police with the supplies they need to restore security.
We are also working to hold accountable those actors who are responsible for some of the lawlessness, some of the bloodshed and violence, and the impasses that have had humanitarian implications on far too many Haitian people. We've announced now tranches of sanctions. Some of our partners have done the same on the gang leaders.
Haiti has not had a democratically elected government since the 2021 assassination of its president, Jovenel Moïse. The UN, the U.S., and others have been reluctant to take the lead in restoring stability, say analysts. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists say that up to 68% of everything in the universe is made up of something known as dark energy. Unlike normal matter that we can see and touch, dark energy and a third component called dark matter have not been directly observed, so they remain hypothetical. A group of researchers led by scientists at the University of Hawaii at Manoa have released two studies they say provides proof of cosmological coupling, which is something that allows the mass of black holes to grow without the need to consume gas or stars. According to a university press release, the study gives the first observational evidence of a link between black holes with dark energy, along with insight into what might exist inside black holes. The study researchers had to comb through data that spans some 9 billion years to reach their findings. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Around the clock, the Voice of America keeps you in touch with the latest news.
Tune in at the top of every hour, every day of the week.
For the 5-Minute VOA Newscast.
We bring you reports from our correspondents and interviews with newsmakers from around the globe.
Give us 5 minutes and we'll give you the world.
VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hot flashes, night sweats, mood swings, and weight gain. Ladies, are you experiencing any of these symptoms associated with menopause? On the next edition of Our Voices, we'll look at why many women of African heritage are likely to go through menopause earlier than others and more severely. Join the conversation Wednesdays at 1900 UTC on The Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com and check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition on our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Chinedu Afo in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The Republic of Korea remains a vital and long-standing strategic ally of the United States. In order to strengthen the cooperation between both countries, Secretary of State Antony Blinken and South Korean Foreign Minister Park Jin signed an amended version of the U.S. Republic of Korea Science and Technology Agreement.
Today's agreement will expand the scope of that cooperation, both in areas that we've longed worked together on, like space, but also in emerging fields like biotechnology, quantum, artificial intelligence. Scientific cooperation is just one of many areas where our nations are working together to the benefit of our populations.
The United States and South Korea continue to have enduring security ties, said Secretary Blinken.
Today, we reaffirmed our commitment to improving our allied defense against common threats, as well as our commitment to defending the Republic of Korea using the full range of U.S. capabilities, including nuclear, conventional, and missile defense capabilities. We remain committed to the complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula.
Secretary Blinken emphasized the importance of maintaining peace and stability in the Taiwan Strait.
We're increasing our trilateral security cooperation with Japan, which puts us on stronger footing to address shared security threats, including the DPRK's unlawful and reckless missile launches. We're also deepening our trilateral collaboration on other security challenges, as well as on helping Pacific Island countries adapt to the growing impacts of climate change.
We're working with other countries to advance joint priorities, like boosting inclusive economic prosperity through the Indo-Pacific and beyond, including through the Indo-Pacific Framework for Prosperity and the Mineral Security Partnership. The U.S. Republic of Korea alliance extends well beyond the Indo-Pacific. Since President Putin invaded Ukraine, the U.S. and the Republic of Korea have stood together, along with other allies, to impose unprecedented sanctions and export controls designed to deprive Russia's war machine of resources, as well as to support the people of Ukraine as they defend their country. This October, we'll celebrate the 70th anniversary of the U.S. Republic of Korea alliance. For the past 7 decades, our alliance has indeed sustained peace, declared Secretary Blinken. I'm confident that we've taken another step toward a more secure and prosperous future to the benefit of the people of our countries, of the Indo-Pacific, and of the world.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.